Well, I want to talk about Hebrews chapter 12 and the first few verses of that passage this morning. It's a great passage, I think, and I've preached sermons on it before, and I thought it would be appropriate a passage to think about this morning to train our thoughts on Christ and what He's done for us. And so this is a good passage to do that with. He begins, and the book of... I just turned that off, I think. I didn't hit the wrong button. Let that turn off and then maybe try to turn it back on. But the book of Hebrews describes itself, or the author describes the book of Hebrews as a word of exhortation, chapter 13 and verse 22. If you've studied the book, I mean, you may not think of it in that way. There's a lot of technical argument about the superiority of Christ. We talked about that last week. If you've been doing your regular reading according to the schedule that we put in the bulletin, you will have read through the book of Hebrews last week and this week. And if you continue on that, well, then you will complete the New Testament by the end of the week. You'll finish Revelation by the end of the week. Now, we're going to begin that again next week. You know, this reading schedule, and we put that in the bulletin every week. And so if you'll follow that, and you read maybe three or four chapters a day, it might be five one day, maybe two one day, but if you read that according to that schedule, you will read through the entire Bible in a year. And so that's a good project to do. And so just set aside some time. It doesn't take very long to read a chapter in the Bible. Usually chapters are at the most a page long. Maybe sometimes you'll have a chapter that's longer than that. But if you'll just set aside some time every day, just a few minutes, well, then you will, if you read according to that schedule, you'll read the entire Bible in the year. But anyway, if you've read through the book of Hebrews, you might not think of it as a book of exhortation. Again, a lot of technical reasoning and technical argument in there showing the superiority of Christ. But the writer of the book uses that language, word of exhortation, to describe what he's done. One of the ways that he uses to exhort people in this book is by using this expression, let us. Let us do various things. In fact, you'll find that 12 or 13 times in the book of Hebrews. And here's a collection of those. He says, for example, let us fear in chapter 4 and verse 1. Is that getting up there? Yep. And then he says, let us be diligent in chapter 4 and verse 11. Let us hold fast. Let us press on. Let us draw near. And so usually in these statements, he'll argue or develop an idea for a while. And at the end of that idea, he'll make a statement like this. Let us hold fast. Again, chapter 10, verse 23. Let us consider one another. We looked at that last week. Let us run. That's the one we're going to look at today. Let us show gratitude. Chapter 12 and verse 28. Let us go out to Him, chapter 13 and verse 13, and let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise. And so when you look at the book in that way, when you draw these statements out, you can see why he describes this as a word of exhortation. He is exhorting us to do these various things, basically exhorting us to be faithful to Christ. Statements in the book of Hebrews indicate that the readers were facing persecution. The persecution at the time of writing was not as severe as the persecution that some may have been facing and that others would face in the future. For example, he says, you haven't been tested to the shedding of blood yet, but they had been in prison, some of them, and their properties, at least some of them, had their property confiscated. And so you're going through persecution. So what I want you to do is persevere, hold on, hold fast, don't give up, and endure all the way to the end. In this passage, the one we're going to look at, he gives them motivation to do that. Hold fast. Here's your motivation. Rely upon this. Return to this in order to motivate yourselves to be faithful and to stay true. And so here's our passage. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility of sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And so there's our passage for the day. And we're just going to look at various parts of it. Can't look at every phrase or every word, but take a look at different parts of it. And our aim is stated right at the end, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The primary idea in the passage is this: let us run. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. He's talked about endurance previously in the letter. In chapter 10, for example, and in verse 36, he says, "You have need of endurance, so that when you've done the will of God, you may receive what was promised." You just need to endure. You know, you believe the right things. You understand the right things. You just need to endure. You have need of endurance. Just keep on. Don't give up. Don't lose heart. Don't quit. The word endurance is an important word in the passage. And so you can see, three times in the passage we find this word. Let us run with endurance, fixing our eyes on Jesus who endured the cross. And then at the end, consider him who has endured such hostility of sinners. And so here in this passage, the word endurance is an important word. The old King James, I think, says run with patience. And remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how that there were in the New Testament two Greek words translated with the English word patience. One is long-suffering, or sort of putting up with the circumstances and being patient under those kinds of things. Well, that's not this word. This word is that the other word, to endure. And so the idea is this. It refers to the brave patience with which the Christian contends against various hindrances, persecutions, and temptations that befall him in his conflict with the inward and outer world. The man endures who, under great siege of trials, bears up and does not lose heart or courage. And so here he is faced with various trials and hardships. Well, he bears up. He doesn't grow weary. He doesn't give up. He doesn't give in. He keeps on pushing ahead. He endures. I don't know what Paul looked like physically. I don't know whether he was an athlete or not in his youth. Maybe he had in some way trained to be an athlete or trained in some athletics in some way. But he uses athletics to illustrate his points on various occasions. And so he talks about boxing. You know, I'm not like a boxer who's beating the air. You know, I'm right there in the real fight. He talks about wrestling. Our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but the principalities and powers and so forth. Or here he talks about running in a competitive way. We are like runners in a race who are competing in a race. And just as a long-distance runner, which is what our Christian life is like sometimes, it's just like a long-distance race. And just like a long-distance runner, he's got to overcome the obstacles. He's going to get tired. His body is going to hurt. His knees are going to wear out. He's going to get cramps in his side. And from time to time, he's just going to want to sit down and quit. So he can't do that. You need endurance. Run with endurance the race that is set before you. And even when the obstacles come your way and you feel bad and you want to quit, you just keep on bearing up and don't quit until you get all the way to the end. And so, Paul could have simply said, if this is written by Paul, we don't know, but if so, the writer could have simply said, just keep on. But he gives us this extra motivation. Run with endurance, fixing your eyes on Jesus. But first, he refers in the very first part of the passage to this great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us run with patience. Well, what's he talking about there? What is this great cloud of witnesses? Well, he's referring to those men and women that he talked about in chapter 11. So remember in chapter 11, he's talking about those who had faith to the saving of the soul. And here in Hebrews 11, we have this great hall of fame of faith, as it's sometimes called, in which he brings to mind several Old Testament heroes. And here he's saying, we need to be like them. They have run the race. They've run it successfully. And now they are, so to speak, sitting around us. They're surrounding us as we're running our race. And they're encouraging us to endure, to keep on running, not to give up. He begins chapter 11 by defining faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. In other words, faith is being confident. It's the assurance of things hoped for. It's being confident that we will experience what now we only hope for. And so we hope for heaven, for example. Well, faith is the confidence that we actually will experience heaven, that we'll go to heaven. And so it's the assurance of things that we are hoping for. It's the conviction of things not seen. That is, it's being certain that things we do not experience by sight or sound or touch or taste or any other physical measurement, that those things are real. It's the conviction. It's the confidence that things are real even though we don't see them. We don't see God, but we're confident He's real. We don't see heaven, but we're sure it's real. And so it's the conviction of things not seen. He refers to 10 Old Testament individuals in chapter 11 who accomplished great things by their faith, and as a consequence, they gained approval. That's Hebrews 11 and verse 2. For by it, by faith, men of old gained approval. And so he mentions 10 men and 10 women here in this passage who accomplished great things, and so as a result, they gained approval. He mentions Israel as a nation here in chapter 11 twice in regard to two events, crossing the Red Sea or passing through the Red Sea by faith and encompassing Jericho and then traveling around, marching around Jericho and the walls falling. That happened for Israel as a nation by faith. 6 more names are mentioned, Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 32, but there are no specific acts associated with them. They are Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and then the prophets. Faith in God as creator stands at the beginning. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God so that what is seen was not made out of the things that are visible. Abraham is included twice in this passage. Moses accomplishes 3 things. He chooses the people of God over Egypt. He left Egypt and kept the Passover by faith. Hebrews 11 ends with what I think is one of the most inspiring passages in the whole New Testament. But let's just read it. Listen to this, or follow along with me. And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. There are men and women who lived, who did great things, who because of their faith, well, as he says, of whom the world was not worthy. And so those are the people who have run the race before us. And they're gathered around us, so to speak. They're surrounding us and they're encouraging us. Just keep on. Don't quit. Don't grow weary. You just continue. He describes it as a great cloud of witnesses. In secular Greek, the word cloud sometimes describes a host of people. I came across a passage in the Iliad by Homer, and it talks about someone being up on maybe a plateau, and he's looking down in the valley, and he sees an army gathered together, and it just looks like a big dark cloud advancing. There's so many people. Well, that's the idea here. We have so many people who have gone on before, and they're sitting around us and surrounding. Just think about a stadium full of these witnesses who have gone before, and they're cheering us on and encouraging us. Is it difficult at times to continue to believe, to live a godly life in an ungodly world? Is that difficult for us sometimes? Is it difficult to continue to believe that there is a God who will reward us when our lives are over, when we don't see very much tangible evidence of it? The world doesn't believe that. Is it difficult at times for us to believe it? Well, if so, just think about people like Noah and Abraham and Moses and their circumstances. And they didn't quit. They didn't give up. They didn't faint. They just kept right on. And they're encouraging us. And so let us run with endurance. He tells us to do something else. Let's lay aside every encumbrance and the sin that does so easily beset us. I don't know if you ever watch track and field or cross country, anything like that. If you do, you'll notice that there are not too many runners and they're wearing ankle weights. They don't do that. You don't see many runners and they got long shoestrings, you know, that they might get tangled up in. Now, they really strip themselves of any encumbrance at all. Now, they don't want to get their feet tangled up. They don't want to wear any extra weight. And so they're taking off anything that might hinder them from running effectively. And so that's what we need to do spiritually. I'm not saying literally physically, of course. But strip ourselves from everything that might hinder our spiritual progress. Whatever that might be. He talks about the sin that easily entangles us. And it may be that he's just speaking generally, that sin in general easily entangles us. But it may be that he's saying that each one of us has our own special temptation, temptations that are peculiar to us. That this temptation or this sin, I get tangled up in it a lot. And it may be that what entangles me doesn't entangle someone else. And so what I need to do is identify that, which should be easy for me to do because I have lots of trouble with it, and then get rid of it, which might not be easy to do. That might be hard to do. And so just let's look at ourselves. What sin is there in our life that we're getting tangled up in and is hindering us from making progress and running effectively? For some, it might be materialism. For others, profanity or alcohol or sexually related temptations or something like anger or pride. But let's identify those and let's get rid of them so that we can run with endurance. He refers to the encumbrances that hinder our progress, the weight, the burden, the hindrances that get in the way of us running effectively. Now, there are things in our lives that they're not wrong in themselves, but we spend so much time on them and we have so much focus on them and we spend so much of our lives chasing after them that they hinder our progress as Christians. They hinder our running. Is there something in your life, is there something in our lives that we enjoy, but it gets in the way of our spiritual duty and development? Well, for some of us, it might be athletics or fishing or hunting or music or Facebook. Spend so much time on Facebook that it's hindering your study and your development spiritually. Social media, television, you spend so much time just sitting in front of the television that it hinders your study and development and those kind of things. And so those things are not necessarily wrong in themselves, but they become an encumbrance. They hinder us. Well, this writer says, let's lay that aside. Lay those things aside so that we can run more effectively. Other hindrances might be something like worry or anxiety. Are we so anxious and so worried that it becomes a hindrance to us? Or bitterness or discouragement? Do we become obsessed or fixated on something that it just becomes a distraction to our running the race that's set before us effectively? Maybe we're so caught up in politics and how the nation is going down the tubes or whatever. It just becomes a fixation for us and we're just overwhelmed by it. It becomes a hindrance to us. What hinders us? Is it some attitude? Is it a frame of mind? Is it a particular sin? Is it some activity we enjoy? Whatever it is, if it's hindering our progress, we need to lay it aside and run with patience the race that's set before us. Then he says, fixing your eyes on Jesus. Here are some of the things that he says about Jesus. He is the author and perfecter of our faith. The idea of author, and I think in this passage, is more the idea of the pioneer, the forerunner. You know, Jesus doesn't look for someone else, or when he was living on the earth, he didn't look for someone else to provide the leadership that he needed. He was the leader. He didn't look to somebody to lead him. He was the leader. And so look, he's entered into the race. He's leading everybody else. And not only did he get in the race and be the leader, he finished the race. And so he shows us, he calls to us, follow me, I'll show you the way, all the way to the finish line. And so he's the forerunner, the pioneer, and the finisher of our faith. The writer says he endured the cross, he endured the hostility of sinners against himself. He did this for the joy that was set before him. And when he had finished his race, he sat down at the right hand of God. Now notice how the writer says that he has endured. His period of enduring all this hostility and all of, well, it's over. He's run, he has endured it, and now he has sat down. When he finished the race, he sat down, and he's still sitting there at the right hand of God. And so we know that this is possible for us because Jesus has already completed these things. And if we follow him, well, then we will run successfully as well. I just want to emphasize for a moment or two of the things that are said about Jesus in this passage. He endured the cross. He endured hostility. Think about the things that Jesus endured as he went to the cross. Just think about that. I know we probably thought about that some when we observed the Lord's Supper today, but let's think about that again just for a minute or two. Jesus had his supporters in his ministry, but he continually was challenged and criticized. Continually. Oh, you have a demon. Are you casting out spirits by or unclean spirits by the prince of demons? Oh, he's lost his mind. Oh, he's born as a result of sin. All these accusations coming against Jesus. He had his disciples who supported him, but it just seemed like over and over again, Jesus is having to endure this criticism. These false accusations. And of course, eventually even the disciples abandoned Jesus. And so he endured. He agonizes in the garden. He's betrayed by a friend. Arrested as though he were a common criminal. Falsely tried. Lied about. His teaching was twisted and misrepresented. He was slapped and beaten and spat on. Mocked. Made fun of. Ridiculed, humiliated, degraded, stripped of his clothing, nailed to a cross, and left to die. But he endured. Hebrews said that he endured the cross, despising the shame. We're very much aware of the physical brutalities of the cross, but crucifixion came with an enormous amount of shame associated with it, both for himself and for the victim's family and associates. The process was humiliating. The victim was treated with contempt and insulted. His body usually was left to decay on the cross, left to the animals and vermin. And that didn't happen in Jesus' case, but that adds to the stigma and the shameful reputation of those who were crucified. But Jesus disregarded the shame of the cross. He disregarded it and endured and gave himself for us. The writer indicates that Jesus did this for the joy that was set before him. And that once he accomplished this task, he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Again, he's run his race. He has endured and overcome every obstacle, and he's received his reward. Philippians 2, we read that earlier today. And so he humbled himself, he became obedient to the point of death, death on the cross. For this reason, God highly exalted him. And so he endured, and now he's received his reward. That's why he serves as our example. Look, fixing your eye on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What do we experience in our life that comes close to the challenges and difficulties that Jesus endured? I'm not trying to minimize our challenges. I'm not trying to minimize them. But just put them into perspective. Are you faltering in your faith and faithfulness? Are you discouraged by some hardship? Look to Jesus and run with endurance. Well, our time's out. We'll just wrap it all up. The race that is set before us, our spiritual race, it may be a long and difficult one. It may be a short and difficult one. And so we're going to need endurance. It's going to be filled with all kinds of challenges. Challenges from those who oppose our faith. Challenges from false brethren sometimes. Challenges from within ourselves. Just from the natural world around us. You know, we get sick or we become injured or something like that. It may be that from time to time we get weary. We become weary. Just like he says here at the end, so that you do not grow weary and lose heart. And so what we want to do today, what the writer is trying to get us to do, is fix our eye on Jesus, prepare ourselves, get rid of every encumbrance, just think about those who have gone before. But most of all, put your eye on Jesus and follow him and run with endurance. If you're here today not a Christian, we want you to become a Christian. We want to give you the opportunity to respond, to pledge your allegiance to Christ, to become one of his disciples, so that you can receive the joy that God has laid up for each one of us. If you'll believe that Jesus is God's Son and repent of your sins, be baptized, you can be a Christian today. If you're already a Christian but you haven't been running very well, maybe you faltered and stopped, well, get back up. Just repent. Just keep going. Don't give up. Don't quit. And begin again to run with endurance. If we can help you in some way this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.